Blog Talk Radio.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Good evening, everybody. Hello and welcome back to Don't Give Up Radio. So glad you're joining us again this week as we do part two of They Love with Closed Fist. We're joined by author Carmen Love, who's not only the author, but she is also the one who has definitely lived through this experience. She's the one who has gone through it all. So when we come back from just this opener, reminding us that we are overcomers, we're going to recap and get right into the show.
Can y'all help me? Put your hands together, come on. Y'all can sing with us, hey. Can you hear the sound of freedom?
Can you hear the sound of freedom?
We're free because the curse of sin has been broken. And Jesus Christ has set us free.
I'm more than a conqueror.
tonight we are back with Carmen Love, author of The Love with Closed Fist. And during her story last week, we heard many moments that really didn't lead us to believe there was victory. But we will conclude tonight, and you will get a great sense of what God has done in her life. And this show is really for those of you who are in relationships that are abusive, that you should not be in, as well as those who are thinking of being in relationships, to really listen to the important things that you should be looking for and looking out for. As I have mentioned, abuse comes in many layers and many levels. It is verbal. It is emotional. It is financial. It is physical. It is sexual. And we will hear all of those things as we go through her story. Last week, we talked with you, Carmen, about being in an abusive family, growing up in that household with a father that was abusive, and your mom finally getting out of that, only to have an older sibling now become the dominant abusing force in the family. And you got to a place in your life where you did traumatic things to yourself, but you finally, you know, you fell in love with someone and you started a family, you got married, and this person decided after two kids that he did not want to be married anymore. And you found yourself where we left off last week, being back at home with mom, the very place that you were trying to escape and run away from. So tell us what happened next.
First, it's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me back, Jackie. From that point, I knew that there was something greater in me, and I knew that God was pulling me to a better place. And even though I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, I knew that there was something more for me out there. And I always had the desire to move to California. I don't know why, but California was kind of pulling me. And we ended up moving there. I was 22 years old, and I really didn't know anyone there. I just knew that I was meant to be there. And we ended up moving to California, and I just wanted to find out more about me. I wanted to get as far away from the abuse as I possibly could get, and I wanted to start a brand new life, and I wanted my children away from any type of abuse or chaos. I didn't want them surrounded with all of that darkness. I didn't want those generational curses to follow them. So we ended up in California, and everything started going really well for us while we were there. I knew that it was the will of God for me to be there when I got there.
Now, when you say really well, what are some of the things that you started doing and experiencing?
Well, you know, things changed dramatically for me once we arrived, and I was so happy, happier than I'd ever been in my entire life. I had been so emotionally in prison for so long, and it was having that taste of freedom for the first time. Immediately I began to see the hand of God in everything I did. I started going to school for medical assisting and phlebotomy. I had to take the children with me on the bus every day, but again, I was so happy to be so far away from home. Another thing that happened is I found a church home, and I met Edward and Kathy Coleman. And they were a Christian couple with 4 children. And for the very first time, I was really able to see what a healthy family, not a perfect family, but a healthy family looked like. And most importantly, I was able to really discover who I was. I felt so good about myself, and I developed an even closer relationship with the Lord during that time.
That's wonderful. So you're developing your identity, you're finding yourself, your likes, your dislikes, and you're seeing healthy relationships for the first time in your life, and you're pursuing your dream. And did you start on the dating scene right away, or, you know, how much time did you give yourself before you even looked down that road?
Oh, my goodness, it took years. I just was not ready. I wasn't over the first marriage. I was just so still hurting from that, still shocked from all of that. That was my first love, and we all know how difficult it is for us to get over our first love, but I was still kind of pining over that relationship for a while, and it actually took me about 4 years to open myself up again, to open my heart up again.
I can definitely understand that. I remember sitting with a sister maybe about 6 months after I was separated, and she thought 6 months was eons of time, but I hadn't even begun to heal at that moment in time. And, you know, and as I said, I didn't experience the level of abusiveness that you experienced. You really experienced all fivefold manifestations of abuse in your life. And so, you know, here you are in this happy place. Did you maintain any contact with your family at all?
I did. It was very limited contact, and my mother actually would drive up once a year to visit, and it was just a lot of chaos because, you know, the family was still, they still had a lot of drama going on, and people were fighting each other. Everything that I was trying to get away from and trying to escape from visited me once a year. And but we still had contact, and I still love them very, very much, regardless of what was happening in the household. You know, you forgive and you love. And I have nothing but love for my family.
And it's also good when you know it's only a short period of time, and then you return back to your your peace and happiness. But the day
I would cry when they left, but I don't know if it was tears of joy or if I was sad to leave, see them leave. I'm not sure, but yeah, it was a short period of time for sure.
I can understand. From talking to you, I know that the day did come, though, that you did meet someone. Why don't you tell us about him?
I was looking for a job at that time, so I was in transition, and I continued to run into this guy in different places. Regardless of where I was, he kind of showed up. And we actually lived only blocks away from each other at one time for years, and we had never met. And we finally met while I was looking for a job, and we became friends. And the reason we became so close was because he shared a personal sad story with me, and I was very compassionate. So it was almost like I was attracted to people who were hurting.
Right.
And I listened to his story, and I immediately started feeling compassion for him. And we became close at that point. And I know that most people who are abusive, they actually prey on people who have compassionate hearts. And that's what hooked me.
Did he have aggressive tendencies? Did you see that in him?
No, actually, it was just the opposite. It was really just the opposite. He was very charming, very handsome. He was sweet, caring, and he took away that loneliness that I was feeling at the time. But at the same time, I could see some of the manipulative ways, and he was kind of pushy and kind of demanding. But it wasn't enough to really raise that red flag and tell me that something was wrong with him. I knew about his past. And I just felt like, you know, he was just acting out of his own personal experiences. But he kept pressuring me to marry him.
His past was also troubled in the sense that he was abandoned as a youth. And of course, that traumatizes anyone who goes through that. I'm curious, was he someone who was involved in the church? Did he consider himself to be a believer?
You know, he was. He actually started attending the same church that I was attending with me and the children. And he was someone who was telling me that he was trying to get closer to the Lord. He didn't go into details with me at that time, but he just, you know, appeared to be a person who was just lost and you know, lonely and feeling unloved and wanted someone in his life that loved him. And I wanted to be that friend. He kept pressuring me to marry him.
About how long did you actually date?
We actually didn't date for, I knew him as a friend for 2 years. I knew him as a friend only for 2 years. And then after that is when we actually started spending a little bit more time together.
Okay. And at this point, did anything come up in your gut to say, you know, I like him, but he's not right for me? Were you feeling, sensing anything?
I did. I felt like there was something wrong in the sense that he was not the man that God had promised me as, you know, as a husband. I knew that. And that's why it took 2 years. And I told him that, you know, we can only be friends, because I just felt like something was just not right, you know, and I couldn't figure out what it was.
So then what pushed you to say I do, to, you know, to make the commitment to marriage? What was that deciding factor?
Well, after fighting with this guy for 2 years and telling him no, I had a really good friend of mine who was, she was 10 years older than me, and with good intentions, she somehow convinced me to open my heart up to him and give him a chance. And she was being manipulated by him. He would come to her home. He would see her at church, that's his love for me and the children. And so she was able to allow herself to be manipulated by him. And she told me one day, you need to open your heart up to him. I think he's really, really sincere. And you never know what God can do with this man. Even though I had expressed to her that I didn't feel comfortable with him, she said to me, well, you never know what God can do with him. And so I opened myself up to him, and I married him.
And before you married, did you have marriage counseling?
We did go to counseling together. We went to marital counseling for, I think, about maybe 2 weeks. We went to the pastor, and we had counseling, which I thought helped a lot.
Okay. And did you get any specific advice from that counselor in terms of how to proceed?
I did, Jackie. He actually called me into the room alone at some point, and he begged me, literally begged me not to marry this guy. He said, Carmen, just wait and get to know him better. Do not marry him. And I remember feeling so crushed because I was so young and I was so lonely. And I was tired of being by myself. And I was not in love with this man, but I loved him and I cared so much about his feelings. And then later on, the same pastor said to me, he said, Carmen, you forfeited your own happiness to make somebody else happy. And that was a tragedy.
Right. So and anyone's listening right now, you can tell obviously that this was not going to be a dream marriage, and we'll get into some specific details in a bit. But there are some things, nuggets in there that I just want to highlight and bring out for those who are listening. And the last thing you said is so crucial. Sometimes we do forfeit our own happiness because we're so interested in trying to make someone else happy. Now, I'm reading this really great book by Vandable Moody, People Connection, and, you know, he's very clear to say just because someone is interested in you doesn't mean you need to be interested in back. And it's like going to a restaurant. You don't pick everything on the menu. You select very carefully what is the best thing for you. And we need to go into relationships with that awareness to not just yield because someone, you know, passes the note and says, you know, do you like me, like in elementary school. The other thing I want to say is marriage counseling is something that people often don't take seriously. I will say 2 weeks is really not a lot of time. I'm glad to hear that you did do some. But real, you know, strengthening marriage counseling is anywhere from 6 months to a year. And unfortunately, sometimes people don't want to take the time to go into that because they just want that, you know, romantic, fluttery feeling and everything to happen quickly. But this is the rest of your life. And as we're going to hear, it's very important to take the time. So now you're married, and of course the mask comes off, and, you know, whether it's abusive or non-abusive, the mask comes off. You know, you see the best of a person during the courtship, during the dating period of time. So what was it that revealed to you? What was, you know, the moment in time that allowed you to actually start to see who you were married to?
I remember him moving in. The first couple of weeks, he had moved a box into the house, a huge box. And I call it a Pandora's box because it was a box full of many secrets. And he pushed it back into the closet, and I asked him, did he want me to help him unpack and sort things out? And I remember him flatly saying, no, I don't want you to ever go in that box, Carmen. There are things in that box that are part of my past, and I haven't sorted through it yet, but promise me you'll never go into that box. And, of course, that would make anyone curious. You know, it's like drawing a hole and saying, don't look into it. And so I waited one night, and it took me a couple of weeks to do that. I was trying to be respectful. But it kept nudging at me to go into that box, and I waited until he went to work one night, and I dragged the box out into the middle of the floor in the living room, and I broke into it. And I just started dumping everything out of it. And I just found out so many secrets about him that startled me so much that my hands started to shake, and I felt like I was just going to pass out. And I remember feeling like I was in a trance because I had discovered so much about him that I didn't know. And I didn't
know in the box that you discovered.
He had gone to prison, and he had lied to me about the reasons why before. And I found out the real reasons he was in prison. I found out that he had had a drug problem. I found out that he had a history of beating his first wife. And there were just other things in that box that just disturbed me.
So what did you do once you found that information?
I had the courage to stand up. I don't know how. I somehow mustered the courage to get up. And I remember walking over to the drawer, and I looked for the wedding invitation. And I just looked for everybody's name and number that showed up at the wedding. And I remember calling them and asking them, did they know these things about him? And they admitted that they did. And their reason for not, and I wanted to know why they didn't say anything. I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And their response to me was that he had met such a good girl, and that he was very, very happy for the first time in his life. And they thought that I could change him.
They thought that I
would be able to change him.
This is not the first time that I hear that, and to some minor degree, I experienced that myself. And it's a very disheartening thing. People, listen up. When you are invited to a wedding, it is not just for the food and the dancing. There is a part in that vow where you stand up and you give witness to the fact to this wedding, and that you would be there to support the bride and the groom. And so you cannot, when they say if anyone has just paused why these two should not get married, yes, speak up. Be the one to make a mess and pause, because it's someone's life. And, you know, I too had, a situation where, we're in the church and it's, you know, conferences and different outings where believers gather together, and people would actually say to me, they would chuckle and laugh and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you actually married him. And some would say it right in front of him, and they would say, oh, he was such a wild child, and he was the, and I'm thinking to myself, you're telling me this 6 months after I got married? You didn't think that this might have been useful information going in? And they're like, oh, I thought you knew. And unfortunately, I have a dear best friend that is no longer with us, because the philosophy was, well, she will be good for him, right? She will help him. She will make him better. And people listening, don't fall into that trap or that lie. You cannot make anyone better. That is the Lord's job and responsibility. And yes, we know iron sharpens iron. We know that two are better than one. We're talking about an unhealthy relationship where one is so dependent on the other, or one feels like the other can't make rational decisions or survive without the other, and that's not a healthy relationship. So here you are, and this is all opened up to you, and I'm sure your head is swimming, and when that happens, the only thing we can do is cry out to the one that we know and ask him for help.
Thank you. I thought you was putting out the flame, but it was rain from the storm. Thoughts over my head, making me stress all day long. They won't let me rest, hands on my chest. I ain't that strong. I need a lifeline right now. 911 won't do. My back gets the wall now. Done all that I could do. I prayed every prayer, went to every service like I know how. Just a ship without a sail. I'm lost without your help. But it ain't about my will, it's all about what you want. Your family used to be first, things getting worse in my home. My brother is hurt, we need a word, it's too far gone. I need a lifeline right now, 911 won't do. My back against the wall now, done all that I could do. I prayed every prayer, went to every service like I know how. Just a ship without a sail, I'm lost without you.
Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans, and there are many times in our lives where we are going through so much despair and so many problems, we can just say, Lord, we need your help. And Carmen Love is here talking with us about her second marriage, which turns out to be to an abusive person, despite him not having an aggressive nature, but still being an abuser. And we left off with her opening the Pandora's box and finding out the truth about his past and what happens next. After you get off the phone and you've confirmed everything, what happens after this?
Well, I felt so devastated and so disappointed, and I felt stuck because here, you know, this was happening to me again for the second time, and I felt like a failure, like there was something that I was doing wrong. And I confronted him about it when he got home, and he actually scolded me for going into the box as if I had no right to do that. And the first thing he did was he started quoting scriptures about he used to be that man and now he's a different man and how God changed him and that he's not the same anymore. And so he just started quoting scriptures, and that's how he kind of worked through that. And then about a week later, that box started to open up.
Before you get to a week later, I want to just stay in that moment a bit because it's so important, you know, that you yourself came into a revelation without even having to confront him. I'm not trying to pick on you. This is a very gentle moment. We're not blaming. I'm just saying in hindsight now, right, as you're looking back on this moment, what would you have done differently about that moment?
I would have listened to my own feelings in the first place. I would have never, ever married him. And I had gone 2 years listening to that intuition, that God given intuition for 2 years, and then I broke and gave in.
Also, in terms of just opening the box and finding out everything, I guess I want to know, would you now have still confronted him in that moment, or would you have done something different?
I think I still would have confronted him. I was in a trance. I couldn't believe that it was happening to me, and I wanted to know more, even though there was a voluminous amount of knowledge in that box and information. I wanted to know more. I wanted to know what I had gotten myself into. I didn't know really what to do. I had no idea what to do or who to turn to.
So despite the stuff that was in the box and despite speaking to people, you still felt like you needed to know more information.
I did. I needed to find out more. I wanted to know more about what happened, and I'm not sure why. You know, I guess it's just like if a loved one was murdered, some people need to know the details. I wanted to know why. Why, I guess maybe some parts of me wanted him to make me feel better about it and to be able to accept it. And I'm just not sure, but that's exactly what I did. I confronted him.
Okay, and so you said, you know, he basically says, like you, you know, I had a troubled past, but now, you know, the Lord is my guide, and I shouldn't be judged based on that, right? And people do deserve second chances. So we're going to cover later what are some of the differences we can – well, let's just do it now because I don't want to depend on time. I think one of the important things we can – for people who are listening, to kind of know that he was not being sincere in that moment to say, I've changed, is that he wouldn't have been deceptive. He would have told you from the beginning about his past, number one, right? He wouldn't have waited till he was married to you to sneak in a box to tell you never to look at it, right? So that shows that he's still working on a premise of deception. And Maya Angelou has a wonderful quote that she says, when a person tells you who they are, believe them. And she doesn't mean tell with your words, because people do that too, but tell in terms of how they show you who they are. And a lot of times try to excuse that away, excuse the way behavior, but people are always messaging who they really are. And he was already messaging through you who he really was, but you were searching for that, especially, like you said, you know, you'd come from these broken relationships. How can you rationalize in your mind that you could possibly be in this again? And so you want to, you know, try to hear that voice. But you were going to say a few weeks later, and what were you going to say after that when you said a few weeks later?
Well, it was about a week or two later when I began to see that box unfold even more, the contents, and it was his behavior. And he started to flirt openly with other women. He became more demanding. He was arguing with me all the time about having more children. And then he physically attacked me. And it only took a couple of weeks after that box had been open is when he actually physically attacked me one night. He held me hostage in a room.
No, go ahead. Talk to me about that. So when you say he attacked you, what did it look like?
He held me hostage in the bedroom, and he would stand against the door and not allow me to leave. And he called me names, every derogatory name you could think of. And he would spit on me, and he would say, reminded me of my mother, because his mother had left him when he was a child. And he would always tell me that, you remind me of my mother. She hated me too, and I hate you. And this lasted all throughout the night, and my children were screaming in the background, and he wouldn't let me open the door and comfort them. And then before I knew it, I tried to break out of the room, and he pulled me by my hair, and he beat me and punched me with his fist in my head. And I think that was the first time I just could not believe. I felt like I had died and went to hell. It was so unreal for me at that moment. I just couldn't believe he did that. These were all of the things that I did not see before he married me. He was able to somehow subdue it.
So what did the next day look like after that? I mean, do you just go through business as usual? Did you try to leave? I mean, what did it look like?
Just, I was in a trance. I couldn't believe the night before. He had actually left during the middle of the night, and he didn't come back for a couple of weeks. But the kids were in shock, and I remember walking them to school, and I remember my son, Philip. He looked up at me, and he said, Mom, I thought you said he was a Christian. And I didn't know how to answer him. I didn't know how to answer my son. And just we were just numb, and so I didn't see him for a couple of weeks, so things were peaceful, but at the same time, for some reason, I missed him after he hurt me. I was still missing this man.
I was just going to ask you, because after that he leaves and he's gone for, you know, you see the days are winding, he's not coming back. Why didn't you leave, I guess, would be the question.
I didn't have anywhere else, did not have anywhere else to go. It was my apartment, and it had taken me so many years to move and better my life, and I had nowhere to go. I didn't have any family support. I was determined that I was not going back to my mother's house, and I just didn't have anywhere else to go. And so I felt stuck.
Yeah, he was, and I want to bring this out because we want to look at healthy relationships versus unhealthy so people can really know. He didn't want you working, correct? He didn't want you working. He was very controlling of your space and your time.
So he didn't want me to have friends.
No, go ahead.
He didn't want me to have any friends. He isolated me. And then, yes, you're right, he did not want me to work. He didn't even want me to go to school.
So now, you know, to look at the healthy versus the unhealthy, some of the things that we can pick out, and I'm doing this really for those who are listening, whether you're in it or whether you're, you know, trying to preserve yourself for the future, to really know what the signs are, because I think most of us don't really know what the signs are, and healthy can look unhealthy and vice versa if you don't know. And we know from a biblical standpoint, it's perfectly wonderful to have a husband be the head of the household in terms of, you know, providing for the family and allowing the woman to be able to be the caregiver to the children and manage the household. The difference, though, is that not only do they work as partners together in terms of communicating about decisions with the family, but, you know, he provides for her a budget so that she doesn't have to come and ask him for every single thing, right? She has a budget to actually run the whole house. We see that in Proverbs 31. His trust was in her to handle and manage funds, manage the business dealings. She was smart. She did make investments for the household and the family. So you would be allowed to be engaged in your gifts and your talents in other areas outside of the home and organizations and different things without it being a source of contention or a problem area to cause argument. And, you know, the idea is that what's yours is mine. It's not, it's mine, and I'll give you if I feel like it, right? So there's a very different tone between the husband who's trying to provide and protect his household and the one who is just trying to control, dominate, and strip away the identity of that person. This was your home. You said you both lived in the same neighborhood, but yet he moved into your apartment, right? So it's a way to kind of limit options and limit abilities, and you were definitely in a very difficult circumstance. And again, I mentioned Maya Angelou. I read a wonderful book by her where she mentions being in Africa in a situation like this, and you know, God made a way for her to get out of the country. But I mean, it's that stunned, that devastation, that trance-like that you talk about. So he was gone for 2 weeks, and I think you learned that that had to do with him having a drug problem as well.
That's correct. He had a crack cocaine addiction that I was not aware of, and that's one of the things that I found out when I had opened the box. And he returned, but he still was not ready to be honest. He actually told me that he needed some time alone, and he went to his sister's house, but he was using drugs. He was very disheveled and thin, and so I kind of knew that it was a lot more than what he was telling me. But from that point, he gets better for a little while, like they usually do, and I'm sorry, and I'll never hit you again or hurt you, and I love you all, and I missed you, and you hear all of that, and you want to believe them. And my heart was still soft for him. My heart was still soft.
Did you now see yourself starting to live out some of the patterns that your mother and father had with each other?
Oh, of course. I did. He started breaking in because I wouldn't let him come in, so he would break into the door, break the window, just like I experienced as a child with my own dad. And he was physically abusive, where he would come in and he would beat me for not opening the door. He would force himself on me sexually and then say, "I'm sorry I had to do that, but you're my wife and you're supposed to obey me." So he would use scriptures to rationalize his behavior towards me. And it was devastating.
This is a big issue. We'd like to think that this does not exist, but it does exist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, did you have anyone you could go to? You said, you know, there was marriage counseling and the church body. Did you turn to anyone?
I turned to my pastor. I turned to my pastor many times. I trusted him. There wasn't too many people that I did trust, but I did trust him. I trusted Edward and Kathy Coleman and a couple of other people. And people tried to intervene. There were so many people from the church that would come to us and try and talk to both of us, but mainly try to get through to him. But no one was able to reach that part of him that was wounded as a child. He had a soul wound that was so deep that he was defensive, like an animal that was wounded. He didn't want anyone to come near him, and he wanted me all to himself.
I was just thinking that there's two things that you just said there that are also really poignant that I want to drive home. That's not normal behavior. Yes, our bodies belong to one another when we are husband and wife, but the act of making love to your spouse is one of that love, and it's not something that is to bring pain or trauma or any of that to the situation. And if you are experiencing that is a form of abuse. And I know that there are still people who are teaching that if you're married to the person that and you belong to them, that there's no way to be raped or to have sexual abuse happening within a marriage, but that is really doing something very destructive to the party who's being stripped of their everything in order to have this person appeased. And it's an act of violence, by the way. They're not doing it because they love their wives so much and they can't wait to be with them. It's an act of violence, and it's an act of intimidation. So we need to be very clear on that. And the other thing that you mentioned is I'm glad to hear that they were willing to get involved and come to your home and talk.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the talking is that we're treating it as if it's just bad behavior, and not realizing that this is something that is more serious. Like you mentioned, this is a deeper wound. So what if you just have a conversation with someone about their behavior? One, if they're a manipulator, they'll be really good at convincing them that it's really all your fault. That's number one, right?
Of course.
The victim gets victimized some more. You know, did you have any experiences with that happening?
I did. Not only did my husband blame me for everything, but I actually had pastors who would call me and say, we thought you were a woman of God, because they would see the scratches on him. He was so manipulative that he was able to go to the church and somehow make them believe that I was the aggressor. And I simply was just defending myself. I mean, I'm pregnant. I've got him sitting on top of my chest, slapping me, beating me for hours, and I'm scratching him to try to get him off of me, but I was the one that was in the wrong. So I actually had clergymen tell me that I was wrong him and that I was the abuser, and I just felt like I didn't have anybody on my side. He was so smooth talking and very, very, very much a con artist, and people believed him. They believed him. And a lot of times victims, we're quiet and we're ashamed and we don't talk and we don't tell people what we're going through. But the manipulator and the abuser is always the one going around doing all the talking and trying to make it appear as if we're the ones with the problem. And that's what happens.
If you are in a situation like you were in, it's not an issue of talking with the person. It's an issue of getting the family member that's in danger out of the situation, and then you talk to the person who's being abusive.
Absolutely.
Then you get him into counseling and help put the people who are in danger in safety first, and then you go and have that conversation, because when they leave, it just makes the situation more stressful for you, because now the person's going to be like, oh, well, you know, you exposed me again, and it just intensifies. Our time is going so quickly. We've only got 10 minutes left, and there's so much to discuss. How did you get away? How did you get out of this?
Well, quickly, I had, by this time, I had my fourth child. I was pregnant with my fourth child, and I had had false labor pains, and my mother had driven she had driven so many miles and hours to get to me and pick up the other two children. She left the 18-month-old Timothy with me, and I went into labor. I was forced to go into labor. Actually, my husband forced himself on me for me to go into early labor, and I started bleeding so heavily that I was admitted, and my labor was started, and I ended up having Kaylin. June 22nd, 1993, and I remember he was jaundiced at the time, so they kept him under the lights for a few days, and I remember going back home, and my husband kind of held me hostage in the house. He wouldn't let me out of the house, and I remember cleaning up, and he would go into the room that I cleaned up, and he would dump garbage on the floor and demand that I clean it up, and he held a knife to my throat, and he kept feeling like I was leaving. I was going to leave him. And I was. And I had prayed and I asked God to give me a sign, you know, that I needed to get away from him and that tonight had to be the night. And I remember I was quiet for a while because my inner spirit kept telling me not to argue back with him. And so I obeyed the Holy Spirit. And what I did was I made him believe that I was getting my 18-month-old son ready to go to bed, and we walked up the stairs, and I closed the bedroom door. We were on the second level, and I had just had a baby, and I had just had surgery, and so I was sutured everywhere. I had stitches everywhere, but I opened the window, and I jumped, and I tore stitches, and I sprained my ankle, and I remember beckoning my 18-month-old son, who thought I was playing a game with him, to jump into my arms, and he wouldn't for a while. He was scared. And he dangled from the Wendell for a while, and finally he jumped, caught him, and he landed on my stitches and tore more stitches. But I was more concerned about my heart, the pain in my heart, than I was the physical pain. And I ran for my life. And I ran across the street. My mother, she was waiting for us, and she got out of the car with holding a big stick in her hand, ready to fight if she had to. Mm-hmm. And she shoved us in the back of the car, and we drove off and went to the hospital, and they hid us. And not only did they hide me, but they hid the baby in a different nursery.
Okay.
And they
That's what I'm talking about. You see, that's the type of intervention that's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, hospitals have lost that a little bit today because there's so much imposition on other forces coming in to dictate to them how to respond in a given situation. But for you, they
mm-hmm.
were able to say, you know, we'll hide the baby, we'll get you safe, we'll get you out. And that's how you were able
yeah.
to make it out. In our last few minutes, I want you to, before I even ask that, how are your kids and how's your life now? How's everybody doing?
My life is wonderful. God is so good. And if you just hang in there, rewards do come. There is so much beauty in the ashes. And, you know, so much has happened for me. And I'm a counselor. I'm a mental health counselor. And I actually help. I run groups for women who are abused and actually for men, for perpetrators. And also, my children are doing so well. It took them a while, and they went through their trials and tribulations as a result of the abuse, and because they witnessed it. But they're doing so well, and I am so proud of them, Kimberly and Philip and Timothy and Kaylin, all grown up now and doing so very well and serving the Lord. They have hearts for God, and that's the most important thing to me.
I love it. I love to hear that. What advice would you give to women who are in an abusive relationship right now?
I cannot stress the importance of this, and please, I pray that they're listening to, please trust your intuition. We have the oldest, most sophisticated alarm system built into each and every one of us. And we don't even have to justify our feelings with anyone. We just need to trust it. I mean, if you have a gut feeling that something is wrong with someone, you don't have to stick around to find out what it is. Just leave. And Bishop T.D. Jakes, he had said, a bird and a fish, they can fall in love, but where would they live? And so with that being said, it is so important to be careful of hearing sad stories, because that's how manipulators draw you in, to know your worth. It's very important that you see yourself as God sees you. Love is not painful. I was taught at an early age that love was very painful, and it's not. It's not painful if someone you love is insulting you or controlling you or isolating you or physically hurting you. Get out, because if they hit you once, they'll do it again. And last, you know, like I said, trust your intuition. If you feel like there's something wrong, get out, leave. You know, I understand how difficult it is for you to leave, but if you can't do it for yourself, please do it for the children.
Right, and as we've learned from your story, is that if you don't do it for the children, they can adapt that very same behavior. So you definitely want to, you know, you want to get out and leave, but one of the mistakes that you made that I know you said that you don't want others to make is do not announce that you're leaving. You know, do not.
Exactly. No, you don't want to do that.
Right, because that's not going to help you. And then while they're getting counseling, hopefully they will get counseling. But even if they don't get counseling, make sure you get counseling, right? It's important for you to find your wholeness and your well-being. And that can be your pastor. It can be a Christian family. It can be someone who's actually a psychologist. We've said that on the show many times. But the key is to get counseling. What would you say to someone who's just pursuing a relationship? They're not in one yet. They're not bound to anyone yet. What should they look for?
An abusive person is not always aggressive. They can be very subtle, and look for the subtle signs. Look for ways that they're trying to take away your individuality. You know, you were an individual before you met them. They will become very, very demanding of your time. They'll try to isolate you from family and friends, because they know that if your family is involved, they'll convince you that there's something wrong with the relationship. Look for the subtle sound signs. If you feel like you're pulling away from people that have been supportive of you and moving closer to this person, then that's a sign right there. Look for the red flags. Don't get caught up in the way they look or how they make you feel physically or emotionally. There are red flags. Pay attention to the red flags. And most importantly,
go ahead.
And most importantly, just to never give up. Don't let giving up ever be an option. You know, and that the enemy of our souls would love for us to just throw in the towel and invite anyone into our lives when we're lonely. But you got to remember that the rough diamond that doesn't remain under the chisel will never become a precious jewel. And it's never God's will for us to be in abusive relationships.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And I think one more thing that I would add to that is the fact that you have people around you, if you have people around you who love you in mm-hmm. any way at all, you know, listen to what they're saying. Sometimes we're so quick to just trust only our emotions, and we miss mm-hmm. out on the fact that these people might be able to see something. They might be able to see our blind spot. They might be able to see the thing that we can't
mm-hmm.
see. So it's important mm-hmm. to listen to one another. I want our listeners to know, yes, these two shows have been very heady and very heavy. Next week we're going to have Toni Henderson Mayers on, and she's going to talk about wise courtship. So we're going to talk about before relationship. It's a wonderful marriage guide. And so, there, you know, marriage is a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful thing, and we don't want to make it seem like it's not. That's why we're having these relationship discussions, to uncover mm-hmm. the lies that is projected to say, oh, this is how it's supposed to be if you're in the church. You know, the three monotheistic religions are the three religions that have the most abuse happening in the home, and that's not God's design. And so mm-hmm. as Christians, as people who are naming the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we are to be better examples. And so it's time for us to shed this lie. It's time for us to look it in the face and stop being silent about it. And when people come to you and say, you know, this is what's going on, please do not make it worse. If you don't know how to proceed, there's a lot of resources out there that you can get them the proper help, but don't make it worse. That's the last thing we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Carmen, for sharing. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much. God bless you.
God bless you. Until next week, I want everyone listening to be their own best hero. Don't let yourself down, because the one who gave his whole life for you, believes that you are worth it. So for now, spend this week saying goodbye to all the things, people that really shouldn't be in your life. It's okay.
On your shoulder, always keeping you wrapped in chains, to the path that you can't undo, to the pain that you're walking through.